Okay. There are four types of non-possessory interests: easements, profits, covenants, and servitudes. Within these, there's subgroups. But basically what they do with non-possessory interest is someone else owns, controls, has all those rights in the property, and will give you the right to use it. You never get the other equip rights, you only get the right to use it. They are called non-possessory interests. Oh, boy. I don't know how I got Tinkerbell here. Hold on a second. I really don't mean to put in the sound effects. It's better than the other one. One of my other ones has bombs on it. This is better than that. Sounds like a war zone where everything explodes. Now, possessory interests, you actually hold that interest, and even in the case of future interests, where you haven't gotten it yet, you will eventually, if you get it, possess it. With non-possessory interests, you never get it. Not ever. As we said, let me go back. Four of them: easements, profits, covenants, and servitudes. On the final exam, I will ask you to name these. Okay? That these are the non-possessory interests. I'm not going to really ask you to define them, other than what we're going to go through tonight a little bit. But you need to know what they are. And the big one is the first one. Because most properties do have easements. Most properties do not have the bottom three. They are rare. Okay? The only time you'll have a profit is if you have a natural resource on your property that somebody wants to extract or you want to sell. Okay? They create a right to use the land possessed by someone else. They have many similarities, but they also have differences. There are four types of easements. With an easement, it's a right to use the property that's not yours, that you don't possess, and there's four ways that they come about: affirmative, negative, appurtenant, and engross. What are they? Okay? Affirmative easements are just what they say they are. I will give you, as a landowner, as the person who has all those equal rights in a piece of real property, the right to use my land. It's a contractual right. What I will do is, and it's usually paid for, I'll go to you and say, you know, I own a piece of property behind you. I can't really access that property very well from the street. I need to be able to drive over your property to get to mine. Can I have an easement over your property to drive over it? I say, okay, but it's going to cost you. It's not free. I'm not going to sell you the property because that diminishes the value of mine, but I'll give you the right to drive over my property to get to your property for, say, $5,000. that easily will run through the land. That means as long as the two properties are next to each other, which will be forever, you'll have the right to drive over them. I can grant you that right. It's similar to if I sold you that property. But I'm not giving you all the equal rights. I'm only giving you the right to use it. Okay? Now, using it means you get to plow it. You might be able, depending on what the easement says, to be able to blacktop it. But you definitely can drop it, can drive over it. Okay? That is an affirmative easement. That easement allows you to use the property in the manner that the easement says. Easements are documents. We no longer do livery of season. We don't have ceremonies anymore on the real property. We have documents. The principal document is the deed. Easements are one of two things with respect to the deed. They're either attached to the deed, filed in the office of the county clerk, so you can look it up, or they're actually written into the deed. Most of the time, they're actually written into the deed. So when you read the deed, it will show that there's an easement there. Okay? And when you go and get a survey map done, because that's required when you sell your house, it will show the easement there. If you have power lines or cable lines or gas lines that come into your house, they all take an easement from you. Now, they don't pay you for it. NMOOC doesn't pay you to be in, or I'm sorry, National Grid now, doesn't pay you to be able to run the electric line on your house. The phone company, for those of you two people in this room who might have landline cell phones, landline phones have to run a wire under your property to connect up to your house. Okay? Cable. To be able to get the internet, you usually have to have cable. Okay? All those things will have an easement. They don't pay you for them. But it's listed on your deed because otherwise they don't have a right to run that cable. Interestingly enough, municipalities generally have an easement on the first 10 feet of your property line. Why? That's where they put their sewers. That's where they put their drainage ditches. They generally, throughout the course of your whole community, the first 10 feet of that property that you own between the street and your home is an easement by the locality. So the town you live in, the city you live in, they will have an easement. That's one of the reasons why the town or the city can put a sidewalk there, because they have an easement on that property. Even if you say, I don't want a sidewalk in front of my house, guess what? Tough pigs. Because they have an easement there. If they want to run a drainage ditch under your property the first 10 feet, you may say, I don't want that. I don't like to hear the sound of running water 10 feet under my property. Guess what? It's there. Okay? You can't stop that because they have an easement. Easements of permit are the most common easement. They are the easement where 90% of the easements exist. Negative easements are identical to covenants and servitudes. What a negative easement does is, similar to an easement, I will pay you to not do something with your property. Okay? I will pay you that you can't drive trucks over your property on a certain period of time in a certain area, okay? I will pay you where you won't put up a fence on your property because it'll block my view. Okay? That is a negative easement. They are extraordinarily rare. Okay? Most people don't want to pay or be paid as a landowner to not be able to use their property. It's one thing to pay to say, I need to use it, will you let me use it? People generally will allow that, particularly if it's for a mutual benefit, like the power company running the cable. But to say, guess what, you can never put a fence on your property because it'll block my view, a lot of people have a problem with that. So negative easements are very rare, but they exist.
Most of the time, they do it in terms of covenants and servitudes, and we'll talk about that. Okay? Easements of pertinence are a special type of easement,
usually out of a subdivided property. What's a subdivided property? There are two lots where one was formed out of the other. Okay? You're building a new housing development. The housing development I live in used to be a farm. So all the lots used to be part of the same property. They built roads in them, but wherever you are, they used to be part of the same property. With this type of easement, you have two properties that were next to each other, that were related to each other.
And as a result, sometimes with an easement of pertinence, when they're next to each other, they have to have an interrelationship.
That means in order to get to my property, I have to drive up there. That my property requires a storm ditch to go over your property. Okay? Those are called easement of pertinence where they're next to each other and where one property is dominant over the other. Again, these are not usual because like the instance of the town will generally wipe these out by saying first 10 feet of everybody's property, I put the storm on. Okay? These were much more common before you had municipalities grow up in New York,
and now that you have a more mature governmental system throughout the state, these are relatively rare because most towns have stormwater systems.
Most towns, even in rural areas, have drainage and public water. So you don't generally need it. But when you don't have it, in order to get public water, I can have, to give you an example, the water line is down this road, and the only way I can get it through my house is to go over your property. That's an easement of pertinence because you and I are next to each other. I can't get to that thing that I need without going over your property. Okay?
It's different than an affirmative easement because the two properties are interrelated, but it doesn't have that much of a different effect. And lastly, an easement in gross is where there is no dominant piece of
property. They're interrelated but separated.
There's not a lot of difference here other than the fact you're going to need to go over one property to get to the other, but they aren't necessarily attached. Okay? Okay. How do you create these? We talked a little bit about it.
An easement is a contract between two landowners. Okay? They have to be two landowners
or a person who wants to deliver services to your land. Most easements are given by what we call grant. That's a contract.
I, as the landowner, grant you the right to use my property. As a landowner, as the owner of a piece of lot, I can grant others the right right of any of my input rights. I can grant you the right to exclude. I can, what we call, reduce the estate. One of the reductions is an easement.
Express grants are a contract. As we said, it's either written into the deed or it is attached to it by a separate document.
Usually what happens is it's a separate document to start with, and when that house or property is sold for the first time after that easement's granted, then it goes into the deed. Rather than having two documents to file, they'll put it right in the language of the deed. Okay?
That's called running with the land. Easements can expire. I can say, I'll give you that easement for 15 years. But most of the time, easements run with the land. Why? If you have a property that's landlocked, it's still going to be landlocked 15 years from now. It's not going to change. So most of the time, these easements do what we call run with the land. That means they last forever. Okay?
An easement by reservation is when you have a subdivided piece of property and the original grantor grants the second piece of property. So I have, like the issue of, I have the farm, okay? I still want to live on the farm, but I make all the other lots on the farm so people can build houses. If I reserve an easement, that means I take an easement by means of granting all those other pieces of property to the new homeowners, that is an easement by reservation. So when I'm making those grants of the property, I keep an easement to myself. So it's not a new and separate document, it's part of the original transaction of the property. Okay? Implication. An easement by implication is created by operation of law. That is the instance of the town owning the first 10 feet as an easement of your property. It's not done by means of a contract. It's done by means of a local ordinance saying, we get to use the first 10 feet of your property. They don't pay you for it. They say, as a result of to be able to keep the community safe and to be able to ensure that there's not water damage where the rainstorm are, and to be able to put in storm sewers and be able to put in gas lines, we're going to be able to have an easement on the first 10 feet of the property. That's an easement by operation of law, and it's called an easement by implication.
Lastly, an easement by prescription. We're going to get into this. It's our last unit we're going to do tonight.
But you can also take an easement by means of adverse possession. To give you an example, if I don't ask you, can I drive my car over your property, and I don't turn around and pay you that $5,000 to be able to get that easement written in, that contract document, but instead drive my car over your property for 10 years, guess what? I've created an easement if you don't stop me from driving the car on your property. By saying, Bob, you're trespassing. Okay? You let me do it. Adverse possession, and we'll talk about this at length, is basically taking another person's property. It's the snooze you lose rule. If you don't defend your input rights, the law says you lose them. It's a matter of the statute of limitations, whereby you have 10 years under New York State law to enforce your property rights. You don't do it, the person who took them, in this case the person who's driving over your property, can go to court and get a judicial declaration
that, hey, I took that easement, I took it by prescription. Okay? We'll get into that more when we do adverse possession, but that's what an easement by prescription is. Instead of paying for it, you turn around and you use the property for a period of time that's longer than the statute of limitations. Okay. Two ways you can end an easement. One, it's a creature of contract. If I turn around and say, I want this easement for you, and then you come back to me and say, Bob, I don't want you driving over my property anymore. I'll give you the $5,000 back. Okay? Ask another neighbor. I don't want it. I'm in need of the $5,000, so I say, okay, friend next door will give it to me for $3,000. Just the same as you contracted to start the easement, you can contract to end it. That is known as a release. Basically, you are saying, I'm going to let you out of the easement. That can be for free, it can be for money. Just the same as creating the easement. The contract that got you in can get you out. The second way is kind of another version of the easement by prescription, whereby you abandon the easement. So instead of taking an easement, you get rid of it by not using it. So if I have an easement over your property and I never use it, I say I'm going to drive over your property every day and I never do, you can come into court after 10 years and say, I ended that easement by prescription by means of adverse possession. I took it back. I took the full use of my property back. Abandonment is the reverse version of prescription. You basically take it back after 10 years. Okay? I've abandoned it. Similarly, if I'm the phone company and you no longer have phone service, you could turn around and say, I don't want that easement on my property. I don't use the phone wire. I don't want the phone wire. Get the hell out of it. That's abandonment. I don't use the phone wire anymore. Okay? That's the two ways, release and abandon. Okay. Profits. Profits are easements where you get to use the property for a specific purpose. And that specific purpose is limited to the extraction of a natural resource. So if you have oil in your property, I will take the special type of easement known as a profit to be able to extract the oil. I'll put an oil derrick on top of your property and pump it out. I don't own your property. I am just getting an easement called a profit to be able to extract. Similarly, you have a natural spring on your property. I don't want your property. I don't want to buy your house. I just want to get the water out. And I can do that with this profit. Profits are just like what they sound like. They're very lucrative, generally. They will pay a lot of money. There's a big argument going on in New York State over whether or not these types of profits ought to be allowed, particularly in the southern tier, for natural gas extraction by means of hydraulic fracturing. There's a process that's been going on for about 100 years that is somewhat controversial on whether or not they should be able to extract natural gas. Right now, there's a moratorium in New York State to do it. There's a lot of poor people. Our economy is not strong in the southern tier, and they have natural gas. The people in Pennsylvania are extracting it. We are not. So
lot of people in Southern Tier are saying, I want to use these profits to be able to make money, to be able to get the natural gas out of my property. Okay? Now, many Pennsylvania hydraulic fracturers are actually doing what we call slant drilling. They're drilling under your property in New York. And you know what? That's trespass. Why? Because your property extends where? To the center of the earth. Now, hydraulic fracturing can go down 10,000 feet. That's 2 miles. And do you know whether somebody's slant drilling 2 miles under you? If you find out that they are, guess what? You're entitled to that. But what happens when the state of New York says you can't, and they do it anyway? I think you do have a legal right to go after that, but there's issues there. Profits can be highly profitable. Oil, natural gas, things like coal, things like sand. You know, who would think that if you take sand out of a piece of property? Guess what? Mining operations are profits. So if you have a lot of clay in your land, people want to use that, take it out, they can. But mining operations are also profits. Profits are far more widely used than you might think. But they're out there. It's the special kind of easement. Again, created the same way as easements are. It's exclusive or non-exclusive. You can say, listen, I can give it only to Shell to drill for oil, or I can give it to Shell and Mobil. You don't have to have an exclusive. Now, would Shell pay more for it if they're exclusive? You bet. They don't want to compete. Okay? Terminated the same way as an easement. Okay? Okay. Covenants and servitudes. They're easy. Do you have a question?
Yes.
Yeah.
What about all the profits that were terminated by the state of New York? Like, all the people who signed profits were taxed on the Southern Tier.
Yep.
What happens to all of them?
There's still an effect, but what happens is you're not allowed to do the drilling.
Right.
So they're not going to pay them. And because you're dealing usually with very sophisticated people on the other side who are signing these agreements, not necessarily the farmers who are signing, but the oil companies, the natural gas drillers, they will say the profit's still in effect, but they'll only pay you if they're allowed to drill. And they'll put in that contract, in that profit, that this will be subject to all state and federal laws. And the problem is the state of New York, for that person, said they can't grow it. Okay. Now, if the state lifts it, they still have that problem. Unlike most easements, profits generally do have a limited lifetime. So if they sign a profit, it generally is not for forever. Okay? It's generally for 15 years, 20 years, whatever the duration that they think that is to their benefit. Natural resources can be spending, okay? And one of the issues there is if they're pumping out the natural gas, let's say you only get it for 10 years, okay? So they don't want to give it to someone for 25. Covenants and servitudes. Covenants and servitudes are negative easements. I turn around and I can have this running with the land. I generally do. They're to prevent you. It's a written promise. Normally, again, found in a deed. It's generally like an easement, or you write it up originally in a separate contract and it gets put in the deed. To do something on a land, or a promise not to do something with it. Okay? Now, what would a promise to do something? To give you an example, you have a beautiful ocean view, but from your property if your neighbor allows a bunch of trees to grow, you'll lose your ocean view. So you will turn around and say, right now, you cut down those trees by trimming the property. You run a lawnmower over it all the time. You cut them down if they're saplings. I want to take a covenant whereby you continue to cut down the trees. Because if you do nothing, they'll naturally grow up. And there's, I don't believe I need my view. You're not planting the trees. If you have trees there that you planted, that would be a negative. But right now, what you do is you keep trimming the property so the trees don't grow up and block my view. That would be a covenant. Say, please keep cutting down the front part of that property so there aren't trees that block my view.
Similarly, the covenant could ask you not to do something. Don't put up a fence there. Okay? Don't start planting trees. Those covenants run with the land. Okay? How do they terminate? The same way as an easement. We can get out of it by writing. You can also condemn the burden property, which is which is rare, but it can happen. Okay? Equitable servitudes are a covenant that gets enforced out of equity.
Anybody remember what equity is? It's a doctrine of fairness. Remember, equity judges originally were clergy. It's an issue of fairness. So you can go to a court and say, it's only fair, I hope I lose my ocean view. He doesn't care whether or not those trees get cut down. Can I go in and have the right to cut them down? And keep that property clear so I have my beautiful ocean view. An equitable servitude is the same as a
It's the same as a covenant,
but it's enforced by means of a fairness judgment,
where you go in and say, it's only fair because I'm going to lose the value of my property unless you do something to his property. Okay? The difference here is one's enforced by a court, one's by agreement. Okay? Any questions? On non-possessory interests. Okay. Moving on. Fixtures. Fixtures are simple. We've talked about this on the side of personal property. Now we're going to look at it from the flip side of real property.
If you take a piece of personal property, movable property, and attach it to real property, it becomes a fixture. A fixture at the time that you sell your real property
gets sold with the real property. It's part of that. You don't have to list it as part of it. Okay?
Once you attach the garage door, it's part of the house. And guess what? When you sell the house, you can't take off the garage door. When I sold my home, my first home in Rotterdam, my wife and I bought a little tiny house in Rotterdam, smallest little house you saw, and just a doable. But I wanted to make it nice for her, so I had her go out and pick out a chandelier for our dining room. Now the dining room was also attached to the living room, which was also attached to the kitchen. It's not a big house, okay? But she picked this out. She went and shopped and found this beautiful chandelier. But anyway, I put it in
installed it myself, I made it herself. And she loved this thing. She would tell her mother, she would tell her friends, what the question is. Okay? In this house, it was about 10%, a little bit bigger than that alcohol pack. Tiny little. We sold that house because my wife decided she wanted to have a baby. Okay? So we were pregnant. Same daughter gets admitted there. Okay? 1992, she is expecting and says, Bob, we need a new house. I said, what's wrong with this one? She says, we only have one bathroom. I said, there's only two of us. She says, no, we're having a baby. We need a new house. Okay, we sell our house, list it, and Bob makes the mistake of listing it way too low. We sell the house in 6 hours, okay? As a lawyer, I should have been smarter, but I wasn't. I should have put in the contract that we want to take this chandelier with us to the new house. But it's a fixture. You have to write it in the contract if you're going to take it with you. And we are so surprised that we get a asking price of 6 hours to wait. Well, then I forgot. So we have to sell the chandelier with the house. It's a fixture. It goes with the house. Now, after I remember the move that I made, I call up the buyer and say, any chance I can take that chandelier? No, we like it. One of the reasons we bought the house. Of course. They wouldn't let me take it. The new house we go to buy, right by your family, has a absolutely disgustingly ugly, that's why I'm dating, but to my wife, disgustingly ugly chandelier. We walk into this house and she says, the first thing that's replaced in this house is a chandelier. 28 years later, it's still fixtures have to be listed. If you want to remove them. If you don't, they go with the property.
Yes. But if you removed it before you listed the house.
That's fine. Because guess what? When you remove it before you listed the house, is it a fixture anymore?
No.
It becomes personal property. Because when you attach it, it's a fixture. Detach it. It's personal property. Personal property does not go with the house, although there are some exceptions. We'll talk about those. What are some exceptions? Keys. Keys, my keys. That's movable, right? That key to the house, although it is personal property, is deemed a fixture. Why? You can't get in the house without a key. The garage door opener, similarly, is deemed a fixture. You can't take that with you. Okay? It's deemed a fixture. What are some of the fixtures that raise issues on whether or not they're a fixture? Because sometimes it's not clear. The biggest one, for those of us who are particularly from the male perspective, are big flat screen TVs. They can be expensive. My wife surprised me a few years ago. I said, what do you want for Christmas? I've been taking to ask her when we were young, she'd always say what? Surprise me. That works out well. I was told, no appliances ever again. Okay? I know. That's stupid.
Yeah, you are.
So, I took to getting her gift cards. They fit. She can buy what she wants. That's not personal. So finally, I met my wife's support, I came to asking her, what do you want for Christmas? What do you think she said a couple of weeks? Yes! One of the reasons she says, I want a really big ass television. She says, that's a lot. She says, I want a really big flat screen television. One of the reasons is because I put a 9-foot projection television in our family room. I like it. And I come over, and of course, you know, my father really likes to watch boxing. My father was a boxer, and he knew that. And I bring him over, and I get him over to my house, and he gets it, you know, and you can see the cut gashing the walls. It's really great, 9-foot screen. And she says, let's get a real TV. I thought that was pretty real, but she wanted it. The question is, do we attach it to the wall? Now, the wall in our bedroom has a relative big screen TV attached, flat screen, that I put up without asking her, because I know if she, I had asked, the answer would have been no. I am smart enough to know that it's better to ask for forgiveness, not permission. But we get this big 70-inch television. It's her Christmas present. It's like, I bought the heaven, because now I'm getting this big television. And it's her present. And she says, are you going to attach it to the wall? I said, no. She says, why? What in the bedrooms don't attach the wall? Of course, that's only 55. I said, because I don't, if we sell this house, I don't want it to be a fixture. If you attach the television to the wall, it is a fixture. If you don't, it is not. Now, it's very simple. You write it in the contract of sale, and when we go through that, I will show you where you write. But due to my track record with the chandelier, I said, better safe than sorry. So my big 70-inch TV sits on two very unstable little feet on top. Big screen TVs are becoming one of the biggest litigation areas for fixtures because people like to attach them to walls. And they forget when they go to sell the house, know that $8,000 television that I bought up there, and they come right down in price, but they still can be really expensive, is now going with you who are buying the house. So make sure if you have a flat screen TV and it's attached, you have to put that down as saying, that goes with me, not with you. The second thing, which was always a contentious item, become less so because they've come down in price again, is air conditioners. If you have a window air conditioner, frequently, despite the fact you can take it in and out of the window, particularly bigger units, you have to screw in, you have to be able to put in a platform, which is like a little arm to put on top of. That is deemed a fixture, even though you can take it out relatively easy. If you screw it in, it'll be deemed a fixture. Electrical generators. Now, if it's sitting on concrete with bolts in it, it's one of these new Generac generators, that's clearly a fixture. Just like a central air conditioning unit that you pay $12,000 for is clearly a fixture, okay? But sometimes people have portable generators that are hooked up by electrical wires into their electrical service box. If it's on wheels, even though it's plugged in, it will not be deemed a fixture because that cord plugging in the electrical box is frequently not viewed as being attached. Why? Because we unplug devices all the time. Okay? Even if they screw it in with little screws on your electrical panel. So, if it is a permanent item that sits outside, then it's clearly a fixture. If it's one of these little generators on wheels, then the case is out.
It depends on whether or not it's permanently affixed. We talked about this issue earlier with the Gruen case. What about art collections?
Art collections, particularly if you've got a big painting. Anybody have like a Gruen-like painting where your father turns around and gives you swipe or two? If you do, that could be a huge item. Obviously, you have $1 million painting in you, and it's attached to the wall because otherwise it would fall down. It generally is not viewed as a fixture, but better safe than sorry. If you have $1 million painting, don't do the Bob Chandelier route. Write it in the contract if that doesn't go to the house. Okay? Because otherwise you're going to have to hire a lawyer and fight it out.
You don't want to do it. Okay? Screaming yard houses. Frequently, these are bolted into the ground on concrete. If they are, they're a fixture. If it's basically a modified tent where you put it in with stakes, then it's not. Okay? Satellite dishes. Again, I like football, so I have DirecTV. Okay?
Drives my wife crazy, but guess what? I get every football. Okay? I figure that's worth it. I live in a development called Woodhaven. That means there's a lot of trees. I had to get my whole neighborhood, as Mr. Kaiser would know, is packed filled of GE engineers, most of which are retired. Okay? Your grandfather helped me put up my satellite dish. Why? Because I had to find the only area where the tree wasn't blocking the direct view. I had to build a tower on top of my house. We had people. People thought I was nuts. I really like it, but I wanted to be able. When you put up a satellite dish, unless you have your ride out there holding it, say, go to the left, honey. Okay? It is going to be attached to the house. It's going to be attached, my personally, is attached to a tree. Okay? They say not to do, but it's the only place I can get it, so. Okay. Unless Maryland's out there holding it, it's going to be a fixture. Now, when these things first came out, they were really expensive. Today, they're not. But realize that most satellite dishes will be deemed a fixture. Lastly, for those of you who like to shoot hoops, if you put your basketball hoop in the ground, like Bob stupidly did with concrete, it cannot be moved. Unless you have a nuclear explosion, or my wonderful daughter Elizabeth hits it with a car. Either one. Okay? We call her Crash. She's wonderful, but so with four cars. Hey, no profit for you. If it's in the ground, it's in concrete, it's a fixture. If it is one of the new modern ones that's on wheels with a weighted bottom that you can tip and move it to the next spot, that is not a fixture. Why? It's movable. It's not attached to your property. Okay?
That's fixtures in a nutshell. Yes?
Doesn't DirecTV own the satellite dish?
No. Not mine. They can.
You can rent it with DirecTV. You can rent your equipment and buy it. Since I did mine 25 years ago, I own all my equipment. So I had to buy a new satellite dish 7 years ago because they gave an option now to get local channels, which is a different satellite dish than I originally had, 45 feet up in my tree. Now I only have it up 14 feet in my tree because it's a lower diameter. But I own my satellite. Many people do, some people rent. You want to pay, I think it's like $18 a month, people rent. Okay? I shell out the money. Everybody's. Dish Network, by the way, you can't buy your own. Depends on you. There used to be, before DirecTV, I never was able to convince Mrs. Farley to go for this, they had 18-foot satellite dishes where you could get the direct network feed. I really wanted one of those, but Maryland does win most of the victory.
Okay. Lastly, organized stealing of property. What is this? This is adverse possession, baby. It's the best. Okay. Adverse possession, you need certain elements to take somebody else's property and make it your own. We call that coaching. Remember, Mr. Rose, we give you acronyms. Well, we want you to remember these things, like Dapper or E-Foot, okay? Coaching is the elements of adverse possession. Adverse possession is really cool. It means you can take someone else's property and make it your own, even if they do not want you to. It's a tug of war between you and them. It is all about a statute of limitations.
What is a statute of limitations? We talked about this briefly. The law says you have a period of time in which to enforce your rights. If somebody commits a crime against you, they only have a period of time, usually it's about 7 years, to be prosecuted. By the way, is anybody saying, you know what? Please don't. Murder has no statute of limitations. Okay? They can get you any time forever. So if you kill somebody, potentially, no statute of limitations. Burglary, larceny, robbery, they don't have statute of limitations. Okay? Sorry? Usually 7 years, depending on what. Some crimes are down to one. Most crimes are 7 year statute of limitations. For civil actions, that means if you do something bad for me, it depends how you do something bad. An intentional tort, you walk up to me and smack me in the face. Boom, break my nose. I've had that happen. Okay, that was it. I was a very small kid, and I was scrappy and stupid, and I lost every fight I was in. But I figured I was mighty nice. I was not. I could have, which I didn't, when I decided I wanted to pick on the captain of the football team when I was 118 pounds. He was fine. My nose was over my knee. If I wanted to sue him, that's an intentional tort. No, it's not. Well, I'm sorry. I need to sue. I did get my nose bent, so. I originally looked like Tom Cruise. An intentional tort is somebody hurts you or injures you intentionally, the statute of limitations, 1 year. You have to sue that person within 1 year, or you lose your lawsuit. You don't get to sue. Why is that? We have statute of limitations. Matter of fact, during the Kavanaugh hearing, there's a lot of discussions about statute of limitations. Why? Because it supposedly happened a long time ago. Statute of limitations exists for a reason. Because witnesses disappear. Evidence gets old. All of a sudden, people don't remember it anymore. The law says with intentional torts, you got 1 year. The law says with negligence, you made a mistake. You come to visit my house, I forget to shovel my driveway, you slip on the driveway, bang your head, and have injuries. You can sue me 2 years statute of limitations for negligence. The law says negligence is longer, it happens for more people, and it's generally less severe than intentional torts. We make intentional torts short primarily because A, it's also a crime, and B, the fact that they tend to be more severe. 2 years for negligence. Somebody makes a mistake, you get to sue within 2 years. As far as breach of contract or fraud, you and I have a contract, and I breach it. I promise you I will deliver you something like bricks in order to build the house, and I don't deliver them at the time I say, you can sue me. That statute of limitation is 6 years. Why so much longer for a breach of contract? Because there's all kinds of documentary evidence with a breach of contract. You don't have the problems of trying to find witnesses as much as you do with a negligence act. It should prove it over time that if we give a longer statute for that, that you won't have harm come to the defendant for not pursuing your rights. So 6 years for fraud, 6 years for breach of contract. 2 years for negligence, 1 year for intentional tort. Real property. This is where we are for adverse possession. Real property is 10 years. If you keep doing the coaching activities for 10 years without interruption, you can, one of the issues is continuous. You can't do it for 2 years, skip a year, and then do it for 8 years. Okay? It has to be continuous. And if you do it for 10 years, in effect, committing trespass for 10 years, the property's yours. Okay? Why we have these statute of limitations? Prevents stale claims. The memory of witnesses deteriorates. The plaintiff lacks seriousness. If you don't bring the action right away, we don't think you're serious. We want them to do it. And judicial administration, it's really tough to come down and prove a case that is old. Okay? Why do we have adverse possession? It comes back to the fact, remember, society wants you to use your land at its highest and best use. We want all the land to be as productive as possible. Why? Because God's not making any more of it. It's a limited resource. We know that. So in order to benefit society as a whole, we want that land used as best as it can. But we also, as a competitor, competing interests. It's a balancing test. It's a scale. We also want people who own land, who have all those equal rights, to be able to have those rights be exercised. So if somebody's violating those rights, as in their exclusion, that's the E in equal, we want them to be able to enforce that. It's a balancing test. And we say, don't sleep on your rights. We don't want you to snooze, because if you snooze, you lose. Now, it's a long snooze, it's 10 years, but we want to value property rights.
That's why we say it has to go on for 10 years. Okay? The last reason why it's so important is it helps resolve continuing disputes between landowners.
Most adverse possession is between adjoining landowners who don't really know where the property line is. What does this do? This determines that by after 10 years, you go into court and say, that property's mine. It's mine. Judge, declare it to be mine. How do you show it? You show it by showing those coaching activities occurred for 10 years. Okay? Now, I'm a newly married guy, 25 years old. Okay? Not that much older than many of you here in this room. And I'm a brand new independent lawyer. Works fresh out, no nothing. Okay? Don't know a lot now, but I knew we'll need the lesson. My father-in-law, who was a remarkable guy, but was always kind of skeptical about the guy who took his daughter away from him, turns to me and says, I need your help. I said, oh, opportunity. I can get my father-in-law to not meet me. What can I do to help you? He says, I just bought this house. They did. They bought a brand new house. This is in 1984. Port Jefferson, Long Island. Nice house, four bedrooms, beautiful. He says, see that property next to me? I want it. Well, okay, how can I help you with that? I have no money, I can't buy it for you. He says, no, I want to take it. It's like, okay, can I RV someplace here? What's going to happen? He says, I want to take my adverse possession. Okay. How do I do that? Well, who do you think I tell? Coaching! I tell them the coaching items. One through the minute. I said, you do all these things, and the first thing you do is you have to put a fence around that property. Well, I don't want to pay for that. I said, then I don't want to talk to you. Because you have to satisfy all those coaching elements. And the first thing I told them, and you really didn't want to hear this, pay the real property taxes on the property. He says, it's not mine. They won't take the check. I said, they'll take the check so fast to make your head spin. Have you ever seen a municipality refuse money? They don't. He says, well, it's not mine. I said, they don't care. Pay the real property taxes. You have a check every single year showing that you have done the coaching thing. He says, what's going to cost you something? I said, you're getting this huge piece of property for free. I said, and I'm not charging you. He said, you're straight or not. He does it for 10 years. Does the coaching. I have him and my mother-in-law. It's almost like a scene out of American Gotham. You guys ever see the picture with the farmer holding the pitchfork against the Wyatts? So I had him and my mother-in-law going to the property for 10 to rake leaves, and I take a picture. Showing the fence. Holding the real property tax bill. Okay, this is right out of Central Desk. My mother-in-law is laughing so hard she can barely say enough. But I take that picture. And we get it developed with the dates stand. Okay? To show this. I think it's the only time they stood on the property, much less raped the leaders. Okay? They satisfied the coaching elements. 10 years goes by, I pick up the phone. Father-in-law, you really love me, don't you? Why? I said, your 10 years is up. I'm not in jail. I said, your 10 years is up on the statute of limitations. The property's now yours. I go to Suffolk County Supreme Court. Enter into evidence. The picture. Standing there holding the ring. Show the tax bills. Guess what? Village of Port Jefferson accepted their money every single year. Made out to the court satisfaction all the coaching elements. Guess who now owns that property? Father-in-law, I am not just the asshole who took his money. It's gone.
Didn't take his wife, believe me. Okay. Coaching! What are they?
Continuous,
open, actual, claim of right, hostile, exclusive, and notorious. Let's go through them, because if you do all of these things,
and you do them for 10 years, that property is what? Get your yours! Mine! It's yours, okay? You got it.
What are these? Let's go through them. Continuous is simple.
You have to do these elements for 10 years without stopping.
There is an exception to this, we'll get to the end.
But by and large, it's got to go for 10 years without stopping. What's the exception? If the people that you're taking the property from go to jail, go to war because they get drafted, get put into a mental asylum, not real regular things, but if that happens, the clock stops. Okay? Once they get out of jail, it starts again. Okay? Once they get home from war, it starts again. That's the exception. It's very rare. Otherwise, you cannot skip a millisecond. These coaching items have to be continuous, they cannot stop, and they have to continue for 10 years.
It is without interruption. It's without interruption by the landowner you're trying to take the property from. It's without interruption from your activities. Okay? Uninterrupted. Open. It's conducted in a manner which would put a person of ordinary prudence. That's a normal human being, okay? Not a super lawyer, not a moron, but an ordinary person would recognize you're taking my property, you're using my property, you're limiting my property rights. Open. You are doing it, you're not just like sending mind beams that property's mine. You're taking action so that person who's the landowner, whose rights have to be enforced, knows that the claim is there. Okay? Actual. You have to actually take action in order to take the property. That's why I told them, put up a fence, go out there and rake the leaves, or at least pretend to,
or I get the mug shot. Make people not only openly know you're doing it, but actually do things to show that it is your land, not theirs.
got to be actual actions, not just, hey, tell your neighbor that it's yours. Okay? Claim of right. Now, who here, I know it's an old movie, but it illustrates this pretty much. Who here has ever seen the movie Far and Away? Anybody? Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman? They do what is called land race at the end of that movie. In the middle of the Civil War, Congress passed a law which was called the Homestead Act, which allowed people to claim property and build a farm on it. To claim that property, they would hold what is called a land race. You go out one day and pick out a piece of property in a certain area, and this movie shows this, that's why I say it. They all started in a starting line. They all got on a horse or whatever. And somebody fired a gun. And the first one to that property that they want to claim would actually put a flag in the ground saying, I'm claiming this. Fine. So the first person to put that flag in the ground would claim it under the Homestead Act. Now, what did explorers do when they first came to a new world? They put their nation's flag in the property. Christopher Columbus comes over to the new world, he plants the flag down saying, I claim this for our property. What did we do when we went to the moon? We put the United States flag on the moon. Now, before we did that, people were wigging out saying, are we claiming the moon? We wanted to show that the United States was first to get there, so we wanted to have a ceremonial flag raising. But we didn't want to say that, guess what, the moon's the new United States. So we passed a resolution in the United Nations, and we passed a resolution that we sponsored in the United Nations and in the House of Representatives. The United States Senate, signed by President Johnson, that said, we're not claiming the moon, we're not going to claim a right when we stick the United States flag in the moon. Okay? Because of the Land Act and the history that always claim the property by putting your mark on it, usually a flag.
Under claim of right, this does the same thing. Claim of right is different than color of title. They sound similar, but what color of title says is you have a right to that property. Claim of right means that you're claiming that property to be yours, and that you have a justifiable claim if it's even just, I want that property, like my father-in-law, to be able to take it. Okay? The party claims the land, the party that wants taken by adverse possession, and takes possession pursuant to that action. It's action versus argument. It's taking action. That's what claim of right does. Hostile. Hostility doesn't mean you have to act mean. What it says is, when the adverse possessor takes the property, he intends to claim the property and make it his own. Not share it with others. Again, we'll get to exclusive in a minute. But that it is his property. It's the claimer's property. It is the person who wants to adversely possess his property. Hostility says it's not your property, owner. It's not your property, neighbor. It's mine. Okay? It is related to exclusivity. But it's the action of saying, whole free world, this is mine.
including the person who owns the property.
It's mine. Hostility. It's a claim that the land is your own. He's not acting with ill will. He's not grumpy. He's not angry. Hostility says it's yours and nobody else.
Exclusive is related to that. Exclusivity says, I'm not sharing this property with anybody. I'll give you an example. If my father-in-law went over when the actual owner of the property was raking the leaves and said, oh, can I help you with that? And started raking the leaves. That's not exclusivity. You're sharing the property. If after the neighbor cut the grass, he went over and cut it too, you're conjectural. Why did I have you put up the fence day one? Because by putting up the fence, that excludes all others. That fence is meant to exclude. Exclusivity is an indispensable element of adverse possession. Okay?
Lastly, notorious.
Whereas open puts the landowner who you're taking it from on notice, notorious puts the whole free world on notice. You're not hiding the fact. One of the reasons I had my father-in-law pay the real property taxes is because it put the whole town on notice that he was the owner, that he claimed it. Now, did it cost them? Yep. Now, one of the reasons why I had my father-in-law do it was not just this, but if he goes to own it and gets a judicial declaration, the town is going to sue him for back taxes if they weren't paying it. So he wasn't really losing anything. But by paying those taxes every year, like clockwork, when they were due, you show the whole free world that that's your property. It goes on record. Because suddenly, guess what the village clerk did? They started sending him bills for the property. When you are the registered owner, because that's who they got the checks from. Who in the right mind would be paying for real property taxes if they didn't own the property? The village clerk sent him a bill after the third year, through the 10th year. Guess what? When I showed that to the judge, he said, that's it. Notorious is the quintessential element.
Notorious gets it done. You're to the whole community. Remember the livery of season, where the knight would cut out the property in front of the whole town and then give it to the person in front of the whole town, showing that that property transaction occurred.
Notorious does the same thing with adverse possession. You are acting before the whole world, not keeping it a secret, not going out at midnight and cutting the lawn clandestinely. You're doing it full notice of everyone.
If you have the coaching elements, you have adverse possession. Okay. Take a 5-minute break and come back and do our case.